WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
During the early 60s, particularly during the Kennedy-Nixon presidential campaign, the poor of Appalachia became front-page news. As Kennedy stumped through the isolated coal mining towns of West Virginia and eastern Kentucky, the media found scenes of poverty that Americans hadn't thought existed since the Great Depression. Throughout the 60s and early 70s, ambitious federal programs were started in hopes of raising the standard of living of the rural poor. But few of the programs fulfilled their promise, and the poverty of much of Appalachia is even greater today. Father Ralph Biting is a Catholic priest who came to eastern Kentucky nearly 40 years ago as a missionary. Since then, he's established the Christian Appalachian Project, which administers over 75 programs, ranging from shelters for abused spouses and children to home tutoring programs and health clinics. I asked Father Biting how he thought rural poverty was different from poverty in the cities.
You're so alone in the mountains. You know, in the urban centers, poverty is not good. But you have somebody there that sees you, somebody there that can help you. But in our area, you know, if your child is sick, you may be 25 miles away with no car and no public transportation from a hospital. I know I've taken a little boy down to the hospital that was dying of pneumonia. And his father had no car, they had no money, they had nothing. And that child would have died had not I come along that day and visited them and took him down there. So that distance, the isolation, the realization that you don't have anybody next door that's going to really be able to help you.
Tell us about some of the people who you have worked with in eastern Kentucky. Who are some of these people? How do they live?
Well, they live because God gave them life and their parents did, and they know a very small world. They know the world of their holler, where they were grown and where they are coming up. The kids will play in the creek and maybe with a lot of rusted old automobiles that have been abandoned there. They'll never dream that they'll be able to even finish high school, much less go on to college. The idea that they can be anything except perhaps what their father was, maybe a miner or something of this kind, is beyond their dreams.
People talk about something called the Appalachian Syndrome. And I've read many descriptions of it, but someone talked about it as a kind of chronic passive dependency. And they said these people don't commit crimes, they don't steal, they stay at home, they give up. This is what you're talking about.
Yes, they've been promised the world. Since the 60s, there's been the New Frontier, the War on Poverty, the Great Society, and everything is going to be wonderful. And then after all that is gone and the hoopla's disappeared and the politicians have found their way back to the state capitals or to Washington, things settle down and they're like they were. You know, when I came to the mountains in 1950, there was a gap between Appalachia and the rest of the country. Today, 38 years later, that gap is bigger than it was then.
Why is that?
Well, because the programs that were spent there didn't always address the real problem. You know, for example, we train some of the people to be welders. We've got enough welders to weld the whole world together 40 million times, but there's no jobs for them. They forgot that you had to have some place to work once you were trained. And the same thing goes on with some of the other things. And then, of course, I think sometimes that our bureaucracy in this land is more interested in keeping the people employed who are in the bureaucracy than helping the people that they're supposed to be serving. We had the Happy Pappy programs, as we called them, which was work for unemployed fathers. Well, they just cut the grass. Well, nobody insisted that they show up on time. Nobody insisted that they do a good job, because if you fired them, then you didn't have any reason for being a supervisor.
Hmm.
And so there wasn't good habits established. You establish the habit, let's just wait and somebody will give us something.
How much suspicion is there of people like you, others, outsiders coming in with either ideas or programs or whatever.
Well, that was one of the biggest difficulties I faced when I began. And people had been told all kinds of things about Catholics. You know, we had horns, we did things, we threw Protestants in purgatory, which was under the floor of our church, and all of these kind of things. And as a consequence, they really wanted to avoid us, if not throw rocks at us. And the only way that anybody is ever going to change somebody else's idea is to stay there and live with them and keep doing good no matter what they think about you. And after 38 years, they are now trusting me.
I think poverty takes its toll in many ways, but certainly takes its toll on family life. Do you find that when you look at things like abuse and other things that can go on in the home where people are frustrated and discouraged, do you find that in Appalachia?
Oh, yes, very much so. We used to be noted for our strong family life, and now our divorce rate is higher than the average in the country. Our spouse abuse and child abuse is higher than in the rest of the country. And I think it's primarily due to the fact that the economy has gotten so bad that the parents are so worried about finances that they begin to argue and quarrel with one another, and that leads to violence. There's also that business that they get married too young. You know, on my way up here, I got a call from my office saying there was a young fellow there that was desperately asking me for a job. He thought, sure, I'd give him a job if I were there. So I told him, give him a job, you know, let him paint. I was trying to get our little school painted. And but he's 17, his wife is 16, and they have a little baby. Mm. He has no high school. She doesn't either. No skills. And you know, when the problems come, when you're 15 and 16 and have a child and the worries begin, it isn't a step but before you have deep trouble.
You have had an interesting life there, and I know one of the things that you did, you were a street preacher.
Well, everybody that finds out that I'm a Catholic and that I'm outside preaching, they say, you got to be a fake. You know, Catholic priests don't do stuff like that. And but I have, and I've done it since 1950. And I stand out in the open, whether it's in front of a filling station or a post office or a general store or crossroads or wherever a gathering of houses might be found. And there with amplifiers and loudspeakers, I preach, and we have groups with us that sing and we pray. And it usually, a stop will last about 50 minutes, where we sing and pray and talk to them, tell them what programs we have going on, encourage them to be a part of it. But our preaching isn't hellfire and brimstone. It isn't telling everybody they're going to hell or have already been there. Our message is primarily one that God is a God of love and that He is a forgiving God, and therefore He is a good God.
Do you find a church too safe a place to be? I mean, there must be something kind of exhilarating about being on the street. I suppose in part you're talking to non-believers, where people that you talk to in a church for the most part are going to be believers or are going to at least be half believers.
There's no question that the church is a comfortable place. Out there on the open, you're hot, the sun is burning down. We were in 110 degree temperature this summer. We had the great drought down there and the sun blazing. You have all of that to contend with and the weariness of it all and so on. I think that what you're finding out there is that you have taken a step on the road less traveled by.
What keeps you in Appalachia?
Well, my bishop, for one thing. You know, he can move me out, and I hope he doesn't. But the reason I'm there really is because that's where I have fallen in love. It's a hard life, and it's a difficult life, and there's so many times, as I mentioned to you before the program began, where I live, I have to depend on a cistern. I've been 3 and 4 weeks without water this year, and you can't go to the bathroom, you can't wash, you can't take a shower, you can't do a lot of things. You have to go outside in the trees and all of that kind of thing, which isn't comfortable when it's raining or snowing. You don't know where you're going to get the help for the people. They come and knock on your door and beg and plead, and you just don't have it, and you don't want to say no. But I think that every man, every woman is motivated primarily by what they love and what loves them. And I have come to love Appalachia and its people, and in a very real sense, they have come to love me, and I don't want a divorce.
Father Ralph Biting runs the Christian Appalachian Project in Lancaster, Kentucky. This is Fresh Air.